Dear ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The View from the Thorax Center for Radcliffe Cardiology. My name is Nicolas van Mighem, and as always, I'm here together with my good friend and colleague Joost Dame. This time, we will discuss the late-breaking clinical trials, or we will preview the late-breaking clinical trials for the upcoming EuroPCR 2024. Joost, what do we start with?
Yeah, so as typical for EuroPCR, a lot of trials will be presented either as hotlines or late breakers or feature sign sessions. Not really the blockbusters that we saw at ACC, but yet still a series of trials that we think are worthwhile to look out for. We'll kick off with the physiology field, and the first study that we'd like to mention is the CAREER study. The CAREER study is a prospective single-center Chinese trial, which is basically the validation study of QFR CT. So the QFR variant based on CT scanning developed by Pulse Medical as an opponent to heart flow, so to say. So this trial aims to enroll 216 patients with chronic coronary syndrome and intermediate lesions on MSCT scanning. That will then subsequently undergo an extensive coronary investigation at 30 days with invasive pressure wire-based FFR and QFR, so the angio-based physiology platform from Pulse Medical, and obviously a QFR CT at baseline performed on the initial CT scanning images. The primary endpoint is the diagnostic accuracy of CT QFR in identifying hemodynamically significant coronary lesions with FFR as the reference standard. So in conclusion, interesting technology from Pulse Medical, and this may become a strong competition in the field.
So clinical validation, no clinical outcome data.
Exactly.
Okay.
This is just a validation of a QFR CT.
Okay. Yeah.
From the same group, Jia Yang will present data on angio-based regional wall stress in non-coupled failure. Mm-hmm. So this is a prospective study to assess predictive value of angiography-based regional wall stress on non-coupled lesion failure. This concept of regional wall stress, which is completely based on 3D angiography, was already validated a couple of years ago and appeared to have reasonable predictive value in predicting plaque progression in patients with moderate intermediate coronary lesions. This is the first trial really looking at outcome, so regional wall stress analysis in patients with non-coupled lesions, and then looking at whether these values would predict outcome. So to me, an interesting concept that adds another parameter in the field to assess vulnerability of lesions that are perhaps not directly physiologically positive.
And overall, this is a hot topic, right?
It's
a
recent
PREVENT randomized controlled trial that generated a lot of hype, if you will.
Yeah, so the interesting part is that as we look into what people do in routine practice, I mean, there are not that many people that actually measure a LCBI score in routine practice. There are not people that use virtual histology to measure thick fat components. Measuring cap thickness on OCT are things that people are not routinely used to do. Whereas with this software, you potentially have the option to make these things easier. You will not be able to measure cap thickness, but you will be able to measure a novel parameter that may be as good as all these other individual parameters in predicting plaque vulnerability in a way that is more routinely applicable. So I think it's interesting, and this is something that we'll definitely see back in the future.
How many patients are in this trial?
I don't know.
It's
clinical outcome. I haven't seen the details on the exact number of patients. So let's see and then reflect afterwards. Yeah. Doctor's Left Main is the next imaging and physiology trial that will be presented. So this is a randomized French multi-center trial on OCT versus angio-guided PCR for left main disease. It's again Nicolas Menevaux who will present the results. So 188 patients with stable or unstable angina and non-osseous left main disease will be randomized 1-to-1 to either OCT-guided left main PCI versus angio-guided PCI. The interesting part is the primary endpoint, which is not clinical, but is a functional one. So FFR above 0.09 is the primary endpoint, which explains a little bit the sample size. So in all honesty, following the results of October and the Lumion, I'm not sure what this trial will actually learn us. That said, this would not be the first French trial that surprises us. Why several comments? So first, I think achieving a high final FFR in LEDs is already proven to be very difficult and is likely not impacted by difference in final minimal stand area of about, what did we say, 0.5 square millimeters in the left main that is treated with OCT. What could be though of interest is the final FFR in a circumflex. I'm not sure that will be routinely measured, but I guess so. That would of course need to be interpreted in the stenting strategy that is applied in both arms, but that could yield some interesting data. So for that, I would say I suggest to watch the presentation and then reflect on the results.
Okay.
In the wrap up.
But at the same time, you wonder why would you settle with an imaging technique that doesn't allow you to interpret the ostium of the left main? I mean, why would you want to assess the left main, but specifically leave out the ostium? I don't get it.
I agree with you, and I'm not sure this is truly needed, you know, because we learned from October that the potential issue with left mains is that you can crush the struts at the ostium simply because of guiding catheter interference or disentanglement with balloons. Because of wiring behind the struts, but that is visible on OCT, but it happens in 18% of the cases. So I'd say it's a frequent entity. And I'm not sure why these lesions were excluded. I think what you're referring to is also that maybe it would have been better to use IVUS, which is perhaps a bit more easily accessible for osteo left main lesions.
Let's face it, you have no guarantees that you will be able to visualize the ostium of the left main when you use OCT.
Yeah,
sometimes you can because you have backflow, but that's not always the case. So I think the practicality of this study escapes me. But okay,
but I think that's the reason they excluded the osteo lesions, which to me makes sense, but doesn't address the question as to whether or not you use IVUS or not.
But here's my point. When you have distal left main disease, how sure by angio are you to exclude osteo left main disease? So
true.
I think this is the intrinsic limitation of angiography. No. So, okay.
No, that's a fair point, absolutely. More on imaging and physiology, but now also in combination with TAFI is the TCW trial.
Yeah, and this is a long-awaited randomized controlled study that Alvin Cady conducted a couple of years ago, or at least started a couple of years ago. And this study is randomizing patients with severe symptomatic aortic valve stenosis and at least two vessels, so two or three vessel coronary artery disease. Patients are randomized to an FFR-guided PCI in combination with TAVI or surgery with CABG. This is designed as a non-inferiority study with a composite primary endpoint of all-cause mortality, stroke, myocardial infarction, valve reintervention, but also includes bleeding at 1 year. And this the add-on of bleeding is a little bit atypical. We're not used to that from other randomized controlled trials comparing TAVI with surgery. And patients had to be at least 70 years old. What I could find is that only 172 patients of the original sample size of 328 patients have been enrolled. So let's see whether that is reality. And then obviously you ask yourself, but yeah, what about then the sample size? Is that enough to get enough power for the event rate that we will find? I think it's conceptually a study of interest, but at the same time there is the sample size, but also the value of coronary physiology in general, and FFR in particular, in the context of patients with severe aortic stenosis, has never been made.
So there are too many questions to be addressed that are a little bit shady in this perspective. So
I like the choice of words here. Nice. But again, kudos to Alvin, and we're looking forward to seeing the results. So there is another interesting trial that is the SOLVE-TAVI trial. And obviously we're all familiar with that trial that has been presented and published multiple years ago by Holger Thiele and his colleagues. It was the first trial basically comparing Evolut, an Evolut R, versus Sapien 3 in basically an all-comers patient population. The patient sample size was maybe a little bit on the small side, 219 patients in each arm with a mean age of 81 years old, SDS score in the intermediate range, above 4.5. And we are familiar with the 30-day outcome data that was published in European Heart Journal. And also the data that was specifically focusing on the way anesthesia was given to patients. So the patients had a study had a two by two design. So first randomizing to either Evolut or Sapien TAVI, and then also randomizing patients to conscious sedation or general anesthesia. And it's very noticeable, I think. But we go back in time, that 63% of the patients in the conscious sedation arm required some kind of vasopressor support, as opposed to 97% of the patients in general anesthesia. If we look at our own practice, zero patients get vasopressors because we only provide local anesthesia. And if we would give sedation, it's, again, less than 10% of our patients. That's minimal amount, so hardly any repercussions on hemodynamics, and so we basically typically refrain from vasopressor support. That said, this time we are focusing on the 5 years outcome, and so we forget about the sedation protocols or the general anesthesia protocols, but we focus on Evolut versus Sapien at 5 years. And obviously of interest, because we recently had the SMART trial that was focusing on Evolut versus Evolut FX versus Sapien 3, Sapien 3 Ultra, in patients with small anatomies. Now we look at an all-comer population at intermediate operative risk, and we see at 5 years whether there is a difference in clinical outcome between the two treatment strategies. And this will become of interest because the claim has been made that bioprosthetic valve function might be better with the supra-annular self-expanding Evolut platform. Well, if that is the case, that should at one point translate into clinical endpoints. And this will be the first trial that will look into that at 5 years. So I'm very much looking forward to the 5 year data. And I think it is even more important than the primary endpoints that were published in European Heart Journal and Circulation.
Yeah, absolutely. Notion 2.
Notion 2 is another interesting and important trial. This is from our colleagues in Scandinavia. It was initially started by Lars Sundergaard and is now being steered by Ole de Backer. This is a trial focusing on low-risk patients under 75 years old, whether they have bicuspid or tricuspid severe aortic stenosis. It's all allowed in the study. TAVI versus surgery. And the TAVI can be done with any commercially available device. The study was sponsored by the four major strategics, so Edwards, Medtronic, Boston Scientific, and Abbott. And it has a non-inferiority design for a primary composite endpoint of all-cause death, stroke, and rehab hospitalization for heart failure or valve-related events. An overall relatively small sample size, only 376 patients were enrolled in the study. It's a little bit similar to the Notion 1 that also was somewhat underpowered, but it is the first of its kind to focusing on younger patients under 75 years old. I am interested in what is the relative proportion of patients with bicuspid aortic stenosis. And then, obviously, you ask yourself, is this sample size adequate enough to be powered for this clinical endpoint? But it extends beyond the PARTNER 3 and the Evolut low-risk trials. And it may be a reprise of the German DEDICATE trial that we recently discussed after the ACC meeting, where it was clear that TAVI was outperforming surgery, at least at 1 year, for the same endpoint.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I think these are four platforms, but there will obviously, I guess, no comparisons amongst the devices, right? It's just a trial to set the concept. But
it fits with our practice, right? Yeah. Because I think we are moving to a more patient-tailored platform selection when we are discussing TAVI and the heart teams.
Yeah.
Okay, and then there is the landmark trial. The landmark trial will be presented by Professor Serreus. This is the first randomized trial that will include or will study the use of the balloon expandable MyVal platform. And it's an interesting study. Almost 800 patients will be randomized, but there are two cohorts. Cohort A compares the MyVal balloon expandable valve with the Sapien balloon expandable valve. And in the other cohort, the MyVal will be compared to the self-expanding Evolut platform. So I think an interesting study with that will generate important data. The primary endpoint is a composite of all-cause mortality, stroke, bleeding, acute kidney injury, major vascular complications, moderate or severe valve regurgitation, but also conduction disorders resulting in a new pacemaker. So it's a potpourri of events in the primary composite endpoint. But obviously, the interesting part is that you have the two cohorts where MyVal will be compared to the two commercially available devices that are most often used in globally in clinical practice.
Yep. Yep, interesting one.
What do you expect?
I don't think any. I don't expect any particularities. I mean, we've used the MyVal now for some time. It's a good valve. It performs well. There's improvement in the technology, and I don't expect in these types of sample size not any relevant differences in between the valves.
So my projection is if we compare MyVal with Sapien, it will be
identical,
almost identical across the board. But with Evolut, you probably expect to see less pacemakers and less aortic regurgitation. I think with the MyVal.
Let's see.
That is my prediction.
Let's see.
Let's go.
Okay. AltaValve.
AltaValve. So we switch from the aortic space to the mitral space. And AltaValve is an interesting new technology that is basically a cage that is deployed in the left atrium. And by doing so, it avoids the LVOT. So you don't have the issues with neo-LVOT obstruction. So that is the catch of that technology. And basically, we are getting the first feasibility data with a primary endpoint at 30 days that includes cardiac death, stroke, and the need for a repeated mitral valve procedure. Also, valve performance and safety will be addressed. It is unclear how many patients were included in this prospective study, but I think this is definitely technology that requires follow-up by all of us, because this is such disruptive technology, I think, really something to look forward to.
Yeah, also because in this field, I mean, there is no gold standard, right? We have multiple technologies, all with pros and cons.
And they all struggle. With a lot of screen failures because of neo-LVOT issues.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, and then one more, but this time in the tricuspid space, there is the Lux valve. The Lux valve is a TTVR, so a transcatheter tricuspid valve replacement technology. Jürg Hausleiter will present the first 93 cases coming from 20 institutions that were implanted, these cases, for compassionate use. And they will look also again into many different endpoints, but I think the most important part is how this technology performs. Can we use it, and is it ready to be evaluated in a feasibility study, whether it is a large prospective registry or even a randomized controlled study? Because I think at one point we will get a randomized controlled study comparing TTVR versus tricuspid tier.
That is at some point for sure
a matter of time. It's different for the mitral space, obviously, because in mitral with TMVR, there's so many other things that you need to consider. For instance, the new LVOT that we discussed previously.
Yeah.
Okay, but that's enough for the structural.
Yeah, so a lot of trials at PCR to be presented on imaging, coronary artery disease treatment, and calcium. And one of the first trials we would like to highlight is the Calypso trial, which will be presented by Nicolas Mabile. It's a randomized controlled trial comparing OCT versus angio-guided PCI in calcified lesions. 140 patients will be enrolled, stable chronic coronary syndrome, and moderate to severely calcified lesions based on angiography, with the primary endpoint being minimal stent area. So it's a small study, a mechanistic endpoint, yet I think it's interesting since OCT The question is whether OCT-guided PCI will result in a more liberal use of advanced lesion preparation technologies, larger stents and post-dilatation. So that is one thing, because at the end, you need to think, why would use of OCT result in larger minimal stent areas? So that should either be because it changes the treatment strategy in terms of devices upfront, or should be because it will be used to get a better sizing, do more post-dilatation, etc.
More aggressive post-dilatation.
And more aggressive post-dilatation, exactly. I'm not sure, though, this trial meets its primary endpoint, since studies on shockwave, Wolverine, etc. all failed to show a significant difference in minimal stent area as of to date. Patients with the need for ROTA will be excluded.
And it's
a small sample size. I mean, 140 patients. So if you think that in Illumion, the use of OCT resulted in an increase of minimal stent area of 0.36 in almost 4,000 patients. I'm not so sure in 140 patients we're going to see a significant difference. But we'll see. And then...
Any comments? Why would patients who require atherectomy, why would they be excluded? Why is that?
I think the only reason I can foresee is because they thought that if there is an upfront idea to use ROTA, the OCT will not cross, and you will not get proper contrast to pacification. So that is my hypothesis. I don't know, but I think that is the reason.
And the MSA endpoint, is that an OCT endpoint?
That's MSA based on OCT,
so all
absolutely.
Patients will get a...
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. I don't
it's
know
not
that.
On
I think so.
It's at the end of the procedure.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. I don't know.
So is it a final OCT and in also the control arm?
Yeah, I think it is.
Okay. So we'll bring you up to speed after Euro PCR, because that's important.
Absolutely.
Obviously. And then my friend Doyoung Kang.
Yeah, Doyoung Kang from Korea will present the ROTA ISR trial. So this is an older one, actually. It's a trial that was developed, I think, already in 2016. It's a trial designed to assess whether rotational atherectomy followed by ballooning is superior to balloon angioplasty alone in patients presenting with instant restenosis. So 95 patients with instant restenosis will be enrolled. Primary endpoint was initially OCT-defined minimal lumen area, but was, according to clinicaltrial.gov, later on switched to an angio-derived minimal lumen diameter endpoint at 1 year. I don't know if that is truly the case or what happened, but we'll see that at PCR. That said, I think the trial is an interesting concept, but as I said, the results should be interpreted in light of a trial that was developed already quite some years ago. Conceptually, in my humble opinion, it's not really a contemporary research question, right? Because if you use imaging, you can see where is the calcium. Is the calcium behind the struts, mm-hmm. and is the stent underexpanded? In that case, I would assume that ROTA doesn't make a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. If there is neoatherosclerosis with a lot of calcium in a stent that was initially properly expanded, then ROTA could make a lot of sense. So I'm not really sure what kind of instant restenotic lesions were applicable to be enrolled, but that is something I guess we will learn during the presentation.
But my guess is that they will have done IVUS in all patients, so they will know whether there is neoatherosclerosis.
I don't know. I mean, the endpoint
should
is OCT.
Be. But do you agree that you would not consider rotational atherectomy when you have naked stent struts?
But that's what I mean. Right? So I mean that if that is not the case, so I don't know what type of patients were enrolled.
If somebody comes
in with a lot of lipidic plaque in a stent that was implanted 4 months ago, it doesn't make sense to do ROTA.
You'll see IVUS and neoatherosclerosis.
Let's see.
All right.
Good, roller coaster. This is a trial from La Paz in Madrid, 150 patients with stable or unstable coronary artery disease and moderately to severely calcified lesions will be randomized in three arms, ROTA, shockwave versus laser, with a primary endpoint, not surprisingly, OCT-defined stent expansion. So small trial, this is a pilot study as it is was proposed in the design paper. Small, 150 patients. But again, to me, it's interesting because there is not that much data yet that really shows the superiority of any of these technologies as compared to angio. And neither superiority of these devices amongst each other. We all know that there are specific indications that you may want to consider if you want to use either rotor, shockwave, or laser, but all these algorithms are not really properly validated. So I think that's why these trials, to me, remain of interest, despite the fact that they have a limited sample size.
And stent expansion, is that MSA?
That's MSA divided by the reference area, which is in this case the mean of the proximal and distal area.
Okay.
Yeah. And then finally, a couple of other trials that we found on the program. One is again another randomized or non-randomized trial by Bernard Wang on balloon versus shockwave, also for calcified lesions. No details were found. And another, I think, randomized Chinese trial on OCT versus IVUS. But we'll bring you up to speed and I'll wrap up because we couldn't find any details on these trials. But wanted to briefly highlight them because they could be of potential interest.
All right.
And that's it.
All right. So with that, we come to an end of this preview for Radcliffe Cardiology. Thank you very much for watching and our listening. And we look forward to doing the wrap-up in Paris 2 weeks from now. And we'll see you there.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.